Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adesk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Monday, December 29th, 2014. Good afternoon, Al.
Oh, Melody.
How was your weekend?
What's a weekend?
I don't know. Saturday and Sunday. How was your Saturday and Sunday?
They were indistinguishable from the rest of the week, except I didn't do a radio program on either one of those days.
Well, that's a good thing, I guess.
I don't know if it's good or not, but in any case, I didn't do it. That's how I can tell. That's how I can tell it must be Saturday or Sunday. I don't have any radio programs.
Okay. Well, let's follow what gold's been doing today. We have gold down 1260 off its lows. Down 1260 at $1,184. Silver's down 29 cents at $15.90. Platinum down 18 at $12.04, with palladium down 6 at $814. The USDX today was up a little. It was down earlier in trade, turned around, back up 0.15, and back up over 90 at 90.20. Little pressure on crude oil today, down 0.95 at $53.78. Paper markets today, you have the stocks are basically flat, I guess. Oil fell to the 5.5-year low. The Dow shed about 15 points at 18,038. The NASDAQ was up 0.05 at 4806. And little change on the S&P at 2090. 10-year yield, 2.21%. So gold is still, they had the opportunity to whack it with all the light trading, and as it continues through this week, particularly with the dollar being over 90, and we're still looking at it at a reasonable price based on everything else. Certainly we know gold should be certainly higher, and of course we certainly know that they manipulate the price and so forth, but I'm just talking about the level that we're looking at now with everything that's going on. It had a fairly strong week last week, and several days it was trying to push up to at the open, wasn't able to. So we had a nice day on Friday with gold being up 18, so it's really not doing that bad, so we'll have to wait and see how the rest of the next few days play out of the year. And already you're beginning to see all sorts of predictions for 2015. I think I'll hold my predictions for, you know, until we get into 2015. Then I'll make a few and to see what happens and see what everybody else's predictions are. That's what I do. I wait to see what other predictions are. But one of them is about first-time home buyers for 2015, and they're looking to supposedly make some sort of a comeback. Millennials are expected to start looking to buy homes of their own. Really? And they say they're going to find more favorable conditions. They're going to have lower down payment mortgages, looser lending standards, and a bigger selection of homes to choose for. Now, we know back in earlier December of this month, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, they put up new lending guidelines. They started offering 3% down payment mortgages. So kind of ring a bell, Al, kind of like deja vu here all over, you know?
Yeah, it reminds me probably of about a decade ago.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not quite that long, I guess, but more or less. When people began to have subprime mortgages and lending to people who weren't qualified to repay the debt. And I don't know. It worked out really, really well. Or maybe I'm not remembering correctly. Maybe it didn't. Now that I think about it, maybe it didn't work out all that well.
I don't think it did.
In fact, the subprime mortgages were blamed for triggering the Great Recession of 2008. They were blamed as being the triggering mechanism when they started to go south. And here we are doing it again.
Mm-hmm.
This must be a new and improved. this isn't like that time, though, Melody.
No, of course not.
No, this time it's different.
And you don't even have to work for it. These are new home buyers, first-time home buyers, young people. Now, it's not somebody who's established credit and so forth, and they worked hard on, and then, you know, they get a deal for a 3% down. No. These are for first time. And they're looking for this area to expand by more than 13% in 2015. And existing home sales are expected to increase by 5%. They think that there will be much more homes to choose from. That's some of these builders are ramping up production to market these people, smaller homes, and I think of smaller homes more for the older folks, for retirees than young people, because young people, they're going to get married and have kids and so forth, and they'll grow. But older folks, they're having a hard time finding smaller housing. They don't need to have. They want to downsize, and there's very little to meet their needs, but these home buyers are looking to service these younger folks, and of course the retirees aren't going to get that 3% for first time home buyers, and they're looking at home prices to drop, because of the supply will loosen up and take some pressure off the home prices, and a lot of the strength in the price of homes were due to the institutional investors that were buying up properties and keeping up the prices, and we've talked about those folks before. And even though mortgage rates will probably be moving higher, maybe, I doubt it, but maybe in 2015, they don't think it's going to scare anybody away with higher rates. And certainly they, through the information, they talk about better jobs. You know, everybody's employed. And I'm thinking, well, how in the heck are they able to? Yes, Al?
You can't talk and fool around with the phone at the same time, can you?
Well, how can you afford a housing payment when you're making, minimum wage?
These are rhetorical questions, I assume. And the idea is that you can't. I don't know what they're figuring here, but you know what the deal was on subprime mortgages? The whole idea was if we can find any clown out there who will affix his name to a piece of paper, that piece of paper can be sold off to another financial institution, which can use it as collateral for loans at a rate of 9 to 1 or thereabouts, 10 to 1 of the face value of the loan. You get somebody who walks in the door, might not be able to spell his own name.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can get him to sign his name on a mortgage, then they can sell the mortgage, and that's what they were doing. They were selling it sometimes the very same day, making a percent or whatever on the mortgage. They'd sell it to a third-party financial institution, which would, sooner or later, a financial institution grab hold of that mortgage, and it would use it as collateral for making more loans. And because they could lend out $9 or $10 for every dollar they had in collateral, it was a deal. It was intended to stimulate the economy. That was the reason. The house was irrelevant. The money was in the piece of paper with the signature on it. Because they could go out there, and now if you could loan out $10 for every dollar on the face of the mortgage, and if you charge 10% interest, which you could back then, you could have a 100% return on investment per year. If you were only charging 5% interest, because there were $10 for every $1 that you purchased when you bought the mortgage, you'd still get a 50% return on investment. All right, if you loaned out 10, if you take out a mortgage for, just say, $100,000, you get to lend out $1 million. If you can lend out $1 million at 5%, you're going to come up with what? $50,000 return on investment on a $100,000 mortgage. You paid out $100,000, you get $50,000 this year, get $50,000 next year, get $50,000 year after that, get $50,000 the year after that. In the end, the guy that has the house is all he's irrelevant. And more than likely, that is the reason they're trying to do this right now. They need to somehow stimulate the economy. Mm-hmm. And if they can get Joe Sixpack to, or Sally Sixpack to sign her name, his or her name, on a mortgage, then ta-da, we get to stimulate the economy by $10 for every dollar on the face value of that mortgage. Hmm? How's it going to work? Well, it didn't work the last time. Well, it worked for a while. I suppose it seemed to work, but in the end, it blew up in their face. You know, there's a point behind this. Sooner or later, you can't keep running a scam. Sooner or later, the Ponzi scheme reaches that you run out of fools. And you can't sell more stuff on your Ponzi scheme.
There's a lot of fools left, I guess, Sal.
Yeah, but there's not that. Now, only a few million.
Yeah, well, that's all they need.
Probably no more than another 30 or 40 million. And as soon as we exhaust run out of those, then the whole thing blows up. Right? Somewhere along the line, someone is going to have to consider the possibility that we go back to some sort of a monetary system, some sort of a financial system that is run on the basis of honesty rather than manipulation and fraud and robbery. Now, this system that you folks are living in right now, it is all based on theft. You understand? We have, because we have fiat dollars, we either get inflation or we get deflation. Right? It never just sits there and the fiat dollar is worth the same today as it was a year ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. It's either increasing in purchasing power, deflation, or it's decreasing in purchasing power, inflation. What's that mean? If we have inflation, it means that's good for borrowers. They say, yay, I get to pay off my debts with cheaper dollars. I can borrow $250,000 from the bank to build a new home, and by the time I get to the end of the mortgage, the dollars I'm using to pay off on the mortgage each month may only be worth 50 cents as compared to what they are, and maybe right, maybe even less than that as compared to what they're worth right now in terms of purchasing power. What they're celebrating is they are robbing. Inflation is a means for borrowers to rob creditors. That's what it is. They're getting over. They're paying off their debt. They're not paying their debt. In fact, they're paying it off nominally with cheaper dollars. They are stealing from the creditors by means of inflation. But if we go into deflation, the situation is reversed. Now you're paying off your debts with more valuable dollars instead of cheaper dollars. You're paying off your debts with more valuable dollars, and that's what drives a lot of people into bankruptcy. But in the process, while you, the guy who borrowed the $250,000 to build the house, now you find out instead of paying off your debt with cheaper dollars that are worth only 50% in purchasing power as compared to when you took out the loan, you're paying off with dollars that are worth maybe a buck and a half. Compared, maybe even $2 compared to what they were back when you took out the loan. Now in deflation, the creditors are robbing the debtors. Now, the point I'm trying to make here is no matter how you figure this, the fiat money monetary system, the fiat money system is a racket. Somebody is going to be robbed every single time. And I have a suspicion that when you put a system together that is based, and I say a monetary system, an economy, right, that's based on fiat currency, it is ultimately based on theft. Can a system based on theft just continue to survive and survive and survive and propagate and everybody's going to be happy? We can't do without our creditors. Those are the people who've actually earned something, they've accumulated some money one way or another, and they have it available to lend. We need people like that in order to build the next shopping center or to get credit from them ultimately that keeps your food supplies coming into your community. You got to have those creditors. We can't just destroy them with inflation. On the other hand, if we go to deflation and we start wiping out the borrowers, how is that going to work out? What I'm trying to get to, and I, it's a running theme with me, there is something immoral, unethical, even criminal about a fiat monetary system. And it lies at the cornerstone of our modern economy. And not just the economy of the United States, the economy of most of the world. They're all running on these fiat monetary systems, and they're all based on stealing from somebody. Either the borrower gets robbed or the creditor gets robbed, but somebody's got to get robbed to make this system run. I suspect that in the end, as people begin to understand that idea, or at least sense it, they begin to think, I'm out of here. I'm not going to play this game anymore. I'm not going to borrow. I'm not going to lend. All right? I'm just going to make do with what I have, and I'm going to try to save as much as I can for whatever opportunities or necessities might turn up in the future. But I'm going to stay away from this fiat currency. Now, I understand that not everyone is doing that. Not a majority of people are doing that. But I suspect that a small minority are doing it. And I wonder how many people have to just sit back and say, this system is a racket. I'm not going to play this game and seek ways out. How many people in the system? How many people? 5%? 10%, 20%? How many people have to say, this is a Ponzi scheme? I'm not going to play. I'm going to get out of here. Sooner or later, this is going to crash. Sooner or later, it's going to collapse. It is immoral. It is unethical. It's probably criminal. I don't want to play that game. How many people have to bail out of the system before the system itself folds up like an accordion and all, and everybody is left holding the bag? I don't know. I have no idea how many people have to bail, but people are bailing, right? Again, not a majority. Minority, tiny minority, maybe a little bit more than a tiny minority, but people are bailing. How far can it go? How far does it have to go? Don't know. Can't tell. Can't say. But I can say that there's something wrong. You can't deal with this system and sit back and say that you're an honest man or an honest woman. We all have to the extent we go down and buy groceries and whatever, I get that. But still, there's a point in time where some people are going to sit back and say, ethically, I just can't do this. I can't continue with this racket. I got to get away from it or at least distance myself as much as possible. I may have to deal with it to some degree, but I don't have to deal with it 100%. And therefore, I'm looking for an alternative because I would rather live as an honest man than live as somebody who's getting rich by robbing other people. Let's take a break for some commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Adask here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
A heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option. You need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hey folks, I'm Alfred Adask here on Financial Survival with co-host Melody Cederstrom. Program's brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
We have some Mint State 61 $20 Liberty gold pieces. They're only $100. Oh, well, not a coin, but they're only $100 over a bullion coin, a 1-ounce gold eagle coin. Add $100 and you can move up into a certified Mint State 61 $20 Liberty gold piece. They're selling for $1,351. So, and if you can go another $20, you can get a Mint State 62 $20 Liberty gold piece. So they truly are the last deal of the year. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. If you purchase two of them, we'll include shipping costs for you. 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. You know, I got a comment in from Mary. He says, we just allow millions of fools to cross our southern border, no money down. come and get it. Of course, that's in reference to the when we were talking about the housing market. And
for the millennials.
For the millennials.
They didn't say whether these were American
millennials.
Millennials or Mexican millennials.
But
we should probably distinguish that way. We'll call the Mexican millennials MMs.
But Reuters just released the census put the U.S. population at 320.09 million, up 0.7% from a year ago. And the figure represents an increase of about over 11 million people, or almost 4%, 3.67% since the last population count on April 1st of 2010. In January of next year, 2015, the U.S. is expected to experience a birth every 8 seconds and one death every 12 seconds. Meanwhile, net international migration is expected to add one person to the U.S. population every 33 seconds.
I'd like to know how many of those people that are coming, the additional members of our society, how many of them are being born here and how many of them are immigrating? It strikes me, I don't see that many pregnant women.
No.
I
thought 8 seconds was quite a bit.
Many pregnant women, and it strikes me odd that we are going to increase by 7% or thereabouts. And yet, you know, there's a few around, but they're rare. I mean, it's like being a bird watcher or something, and I saw, you know, a scarlet tangier or whatever they call them. I saw the, you know, I saw a pregnant woman. You know, it's really rare.
The only pregnant women I see are movie stars anymore as they show their little belly bumps.
Yeah. They'll do anything. They'll even have a baby to get some publicity.
Absolutely. So I found that kind of interesting. And, of course, the Census Bureau is projecting the world population at about 7.21 billion. And that's a 1% increase from a year ago.
Well, that's kind of interesting. That's real interesting that the world rate of population increase is 1%.
Mm-hmm.
And the American rate of population increase is
7%. 0.7.
Oh, 0.7.
Point
I thought
seven.
You said
no.
7.
No, 0.7.
All right. Never mind.
But still.
In any case, we got more people. You know, it's one of those things. You can see this happening. The world is becoming overpopulated. Right? This is not to say that we couldn't have more, maybe a lot more. But the way the system operates, it is becoming overpopulated. I saw one study. I don't have it here in front of me. I saw it a year ago, maybe more. Indicated that you could put all the people on Earth would fit into a single metropolis, not exactly even a metropolis, but a single community the size of the state of Texas, and we'd each have a home with, you know, family with perhaps an acre of land. And it would be like a giant suburb the size of the state of Texas, and it leaves all the rest of the world with resources to be mined or, you know, exploited, farmland, whatever. It indicates that there's plenty of opportunity. It suggests that there's plenty of opportunity for this planet to support more people in theory. But the way the system is operating, that's not true. The restrictions we have on food and resources and whatever, one way or another, we have more people than the existing financial and economic systems are likely to be able to support, which is just another one of those signs that coming into the future might be years from now, but not 100 years from now, not 50 years from now, maybe 5 years from now, 10, I don't know. We're going to see something dramatic is going to reduce population, and it will probably be something like famine. or maybe a global economic collapse. All of a sudden, the food chain is disrupted. I have no idea how much food comes to me in Texas that's grown in foreign countries. Mexico.
A lot. Yeah.
But even I get grapes from and frozen berries and whatever from down in Argentina.
Yeah.
I have no idea what the percentage is, but it's not insignificant. Something breaks down all of a sudden. You know, do we get a domino effect or do we just run out of Argentinian tangerines?
Years ago, maybe 7 years ago, I remember reporting on our programs that the U.S. began importing more agriculture than we exported.
I know.
And that was 7, 8 years ago.
We are a net importer of agricultural products.
Yes.
That's hard to believe on one level.
It is.
Yeah.
I mean, why? It should not be.
Well, it's hard to say. Do you know what the primary import is with food? Water. In a world where we have a diminishing supply of water available for people, you need water to grow plants. You need water to feed livestock. And when you import beef from Argentina or pineapples from Mexico, you're not just getting pineapples. You're not just getting cattle. You're really getting water. And it becomes, on one level, something of a survival mechanism to import your food. You know, if you're trying to fight water shortage in your country.
The U.S. has so many resources, even for water. I mean, I don't think that we're to the point in the drought.
No, I get that. I'm not arguing that we are so short on water, but I'm just saying that in theory, you can interpret, you know, the wheat you can that you import, the whatever else you're importing. It takes so many gallons of water to grow a pound of wheat. It takes so many gallons of water to grow a pound of beef over time.
Well, I look at it as labor and jobs other than water.
All of those things put together, and there's a bunch of things that go into this, but it's one criteria in a world that's running out of water. You know who has the biggest supply of fresh water in the world? We do. Great Lakes.
Yeah.
Great Lakes. It's the single biggest supply of fresh water on Earth, and it is a great and astonishing blessing. But the rest of the world, they are just scratching in many places. Take the Middle East. I doubt that they can use 10% as much water as we do. We take it for granted. Just flush the toilet. Let the water run in the sink until it gets cold. They aren't doing that in the Middle East. They turn on the tap and they take every drop that comes out of the tap, hot or cold. And they take it and they try to use it as best they can. But they have a problem, at least in places, and it's only going to grow more population, more problems. And we could do this, we could resolve these problems or minimize them, except we've got a bunch of bozos who are more interested in going to war than they are in simply resolving problems. And it's almost it's bizarre. There are people who, you know, in Washington, in Russia, wherever, they're just itching for a chance to kill some people. They should be itching for a chance to figure out how to get more water. Instead, they're trying to kill more people. So where are we going? Trouble.
Well, that's one way to get more water. You kill the people, right?
You at least diminish the amount of water you're shipping them. Yeah.
Today, we saw Greece, their parliament was unable to secure enough votes to install a new president, so they'll go to new elections, I guess sometime near the end of January.
January 25th.
Mm-hmm. And their stock market that plunged by almost by 11% after the initial voting results came out, and then it recovered and it was only down almost 4%, 3 point something percent. both the indexes for Spain and Italy, they dropped about 2%. And the 10-year bonds for Greek, they increased by 1% to 9.3%. So, you know, you read the story about two different ways to view this as far as the problems, whether they exit. But the opinion polls, they indicated that the Syriza, they couldn't win the most voter support at the upcoming elections.
And, you say they couldn't or they could?
They could.
Yeah.
They could win.
Yeah,
and, of course, this is the party that wants to renegotiate the terms of the bailout package.
Yep.
With the IMF and, of course, the ECB and the European Commission. And
there's lessons here.
Mm-hmm.
What they're simply saying is the existing government, the one that's there right now, they are essentially in favor of staying and maintaining their association with the European Union. They're in favor of austerity for the Greek people so they can repay their existing debts. And this alternative party, Syriza, that's coming up right now, and in fact did win the election that was held today. It was just a vote of no confidence. All right. Do you have confidence in the government, current government of Greece, and the majority of voters said, no, I don't. And that means that under Greek constitution and their laws, they now have to have a new election to establish a new government. All right. And that new election will take place on January 25th. And if it takes place, it will be between the government party, which wants to pay the debt and wants the people to live in austerity in order to pay the debt to the European Union, the IMF and whatever. And Syriza, which is just saying, they're essentially saying, to heck with that. We don't want to pay. I said, heck no, we won't pay. All right? And the public, the people, the majority of the people in Greece are apparently voting for the Syriza party. And if that continues on January 25th, then shortly after the new party is elected and takes office, we can expect that however much money Greece still owes the European Union, the European Central Bank, the International Monetary Fund, one way or another, they're going to cut that down dramatically. And what that means is we've got a country who is going to officially, or what it may mean, remains to be seen, but what it may mean is we're going to see a country that's going to officially vote to say, we're not paying our debts. Now, if that idea catches on, Spain is in big debt trouble, and Italy is in big debt trouble. In addition to all this, for Greece is part of the Syriza party. They want to separate from the European Union. Now, Greece, this is just essentially a little country. But they are in a position to do something come January 25th that could start to disintegrate the European Union. They just might be the percussion cap that you just fire that little cap, just got that little percussion cap, goes pop, and next thing you know, a bunch of other gunpowder goes off and other nations bail. It won't happen, in the month of January. It may take a couple of years. But Greece may be doing this, and what motivates them to do so is that they don't want to pay the existing national debt. And we can reasonably wonder if the same thing isn't going to happen in this country when it becomes apparent to everyone that our government is so far in debt that it can't pay the existing national debt. And you can bet the American people do the same thing. One way or another, they will vote for a new third party that says, we're not going to pay the debt. You can bet it's going to happen. Because someone is going to come along and say, well, you people out there in TV land, you have to live in austerity. That means you won't be able to spend much money because government is going to raise your taxes and you're not going to have much money. So you have to live in austerity so we can pay our debts. But the truth is the debts are too big to ever be repaid. Sooner or later, people are going to realize that sooner, and when they do, they're going to vote just like they did in Greece. Say, we're not
going to pay the bills. And the great danger in all of that is that huge numbers of Americans depend on the debts, the bonds that memorialize the debts. They depend on them being paid. They are the backbone of pension funds in this country. And when the people finally say the debt's too big, we're not paying it, they mean all the bonds in those pension funds are going to be diminished in value dramatically. Some of them will turn out to be worthless. This is the moment that when this happens, who knows? When's it going to happen? Don't know. Don't have, you know, can't say. But when it does, guess what? Anybody who's holding on to paper is going to say, gee, I wish I had a tangible investment like gold and silver, because that will survive the day when the debt can't be paid. Paper won't, but the gold and silver will. Take a break. More commercials. Be right back. Alfred and Melody, please stay tuned.
Financial obligations or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herb's emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at the 3Ws.thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. As you know, what's our next issue, Melody?
We were talking during the break. I was asking you how many more Malaysian airlines will go missing in 2015?
And my answer is, how many more airplanes do they have?
I mean, it truly is bizarre. And again, you know, it's a shame that so many people have gone missing. If they truly were on the airline, it's hard to believe anything anymore. But it's really bizarre that you have so many from one airline, three,
yep.
In such a short period of time.
I would imagine that's taken a bite out of their, you know, here's your airline ticket, and it's from Malaysian Airlines.
We pay you to fly Malaysia.
Yeah, right.
But yeah,
terrible
bizarre situation,
and you almost have to wonder. You have to wonder: is this only the result of poor maintenance? Or is it just statistical bad luck? Or is someone intentionally trying to drive Malaysian Airlines out of business?
Well, this last plane that went missing, it is a saving type airlines, a reduced rate airlines. So a low cost.
Means reduced maintenance.
Reduced, well, possibly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, possibly.
Possibly.
Reduced inspections, reduced maintenance, whatever. You got to give American airline companies, you know, credit. They hold those planes together, and whatever regulations are out there, yeah, it's probably as safe a means of transportation as you can find on this planet. You can say that about the companies that are American. I don't know that you can say that necessarily. Doesn't appear that you can say it about Malaysian Airlines.
No.
And there's others. You know, where there are people that just, they, it takes more to run an airline than just buy an airplane. Get yourself an airplane and be a pilot too. No. It actually takes some experience, it takes some knowledge and training, and not just for the guys that are flying the airplanes, but also for the mechanics and the suppliers of parts, manufacturers of parts. It takes a real infrastructure to keep that plane up in the air.
This goes back years ago, but we had a family friend who worked for Boeing, and he was pretty high up. He directed building of planes. He worked on several of their major planes. He was flown, overseas many times to direct the different building for Boeing Airlines. And I remember him telling our family one time, if you knew the condition of planes, if people knew the condition of planes, they would never fly.
Even American planes.
He was talking about, you know, he worked for Boeing. He was, very high up in the... on the ladder, chain ladder, and he said, "If people knew how the condition of the planes, no one would ever fly." Now this goes back to late '80s, early '90s. You know, I'm sure things changed. I'd like to think they've changed, but
well, they apparently have, because the planes that were there at that time didn't just start dropping out of the air. So perhaps they were replaced with newer, better aircraft, mm-hmm. and perhaps newer, better maintenance procedures and whatever. But, you know, if there was...
But if there was anyone to know, it was him.
Mm-hmm.
He built them. He built planes. He built the Boeings and the airlines, the passenger planes. And so if anyone would know, he would be the man in charge to know. And so I kept flying. I still flew, but that was always in the back of my mind. You know, but...
Here's a report from Shanghai Gold Exchange, and the headline in this report says, total gold delivered on the Shanghai Gold Exchange in 2014 passes 2,000 tons. And the total volume since they went into business is now close to 8,000 tons. And they've been in business for several years. And here's a little of it. The amount of gold delivered on the Shanghai Gold Exchange for the week ended December 19th was 60,657 tons, up from 50 tons for the week of it ended December 12th. The Shanghai Gold Exchange has delivered 2,016 tons of gold in the first 51 weeks of 2014. 2,000 tons is equal to half the annual gold mining production, of which China produces over 400 tons. The numbers become confusing, but in order to understand the significance of this reported 2,000 tons, you might note that according to some reports, COMEX market has only about 25 metric tons of gold available for delivery. Thus, the Shanghai Gold Exchange may have actually delivered somewhere between 10 and 80 times as much physical gold as COMEX holds for possible delivery. Now, what do you think, Melody? Is this a valid report or invalid?
Well, I'm sure there's some merit to it. I can't say it's not valid. I think that's an extremely large amount.
But it's a huge amount of gold.
I mean, you're talking, you know, Russia, India, China.
Yep.
So, you know, I mean, we know that they buy. I don't think I'm not so sure. And of course, this was before Russia was having its problems, too. So I don't think Russia's buying gold now, but.
I don't doubt gold. I'm inclined to believe that Russia, despite reports, I think Russia probably still is buying gold.
I
can't tell you that's the God's truth, but I think
they got too many problems on their plate right now.
Yeah.
India, they just changed their laws to where, you know, they're, you know, people have friendlier access to gold. So, to me, it would make China the biggest buyer of all of the three.
So that's probably true.
Large numbers.
That's probably true. But the big point is we've got an exchange that's moving. If the report is true, we've got an exchange in China, Shanghai, that's moving 2,000 tons of gold in a single year. That's a fantastic amount. But here is, from my perspective, the big question. What are they being paid for it? All of that physical gold is going over there to the Shanghai Exchange. I don't know where it's all coming from. Some of it may be coming from the United States and from Europe and who knows, Africa, South America. I don't know. But what I'd really like to know is what are they paying? What's their price per ounce over there? Because I don't think that they can stay in business selling physical gold in those kinds of volumes at paper gold prices. If there's not a premium that's attached to that physical gold in Shanghai, if the price of gold is $1,200 an ounce here in the United States, I'm going to just say, look, they've got to be moving gold for $1,300, $1,500, who knows what. But there's got to be a premium on the physical gold. Because if they're just selling it for paper gold price of, say, $1,200 an ounce, there's no reason why COMEX can't be buying that gold. It could be keeping the racket, the paper gold racket could thrive. Guess what? We've got an unlimited supply of gold at $1,200 an ounce. It's the Shanghai Gold Exchange. I mean, they're going to go broke if they're not getting a premium, in my opinion, from the way it looks to me. They're going to go broke if they don't get a premium on top of whatever the paper gold price is. So do you think they're getting a premium, Melody, or do you think they're not?
Why don't you call your connection?
I don't have a connection, Melody.
You don't?
No.
We'll get one.
Probably need two or three, because part of the problem, it's like, you know, you hear these reports. It's like listening to how much gold is at Fort Knox, how much gold remains in the U.S. Treasury. According to some sources, there's almost 8,200 tons. According to other sources, it's all gone. Where's the truth of the matter? You know, this is like that old, all of what's happening to gold in the world right now is like the old joke definition of a Canadian gold mine, a hole in the ground surrounded by liars. You know, everybody's claiming that they're pulling X number of, you know, ounces, tons of gold, whatever, out of a particular location. But what's the truth of the matter? I wonder how much of the reports on how much gold is sold, moved, and whatever, how much is reliable? Do you have any idea, Melody?
No. I mean, no. I'm sure you could track down some of the numbers and so forth, but I believe they're a little exaggerated. But that doesn't take away the importance of the information. It doesn't take away the importance that, you know, these markets are moving gold.
Yeah.
It doesn't take away the importance when you look at our mainstream media every day. They'll come up with, you know, with no reasons why you don't want to own gold, that it's, you know, oh, there's gold price, huh? You know, and they laugh. To my point is if it doesn't mean anything, why do they keep showing the numbers? Why do they even bother giving it the 30 seconds of attention every day, whether it's negative or positive. It's there to play a very important part. And to me, it shows that they truly are desperate, and they truly do dislike gold, and they truly do believe gold will play a very important part in the future.
It always has, and it's a fundamental.
It always will.
It's a fundamental that people need to learn to understand, because it really does help to clarify a lot of investment decisions. And the question is, and you can clarify your investment decisions, you can start with a question. Would you like more money or less money? And I think everybody, pretty much, there might be a couple of exceptions, but everyone's going to agree, well, yeah, of course I'd want more money. Okay, you want more money. Now, can you define money? And most people can't. But for the last several thousand years, money has been gold and or silver. These little pieces of paper have always been an intermediate step between people selling something and being paid. Historically, what happened is if I were going to sell a buckboard or whatever back in the 1800s, I have a buckboard for sale. Melody might come up and she gives me $100 bill to pay for the buckboard. Right? But it's not really a payment. That piece of paper was redeemable in gold or silver. If I wanted to actually be paid for that buckboard, I had to take that piece of paper, which was essentially, it was like a check on a bank account. I write a check, I'm selling something, or I'm buying something, I write a check and I hand it to somebody. Has he been paid? No, he hasn't been paid until he cashes the check at the bank. And he finds out, oh, there really is money in Addis's bank account. Didn't pay until he takes that piece of paper in and he trades it off for some real money. It was the same thing with pieces of paper, Federal Reserve notes, all right? Well, not Federal Reserve notes, but dollars, gold certificates, silver certificates. You could take paper as a kind of note, a promise to pay, an intermediate step, but you weren't actually paid until you acquired some gold or silver. Then you were paid. Now you have received money. When you take that piece of paper in, and that was what happened when the dollar was backed by gold and silver. Over time, we became conditioned. We stopped going to the bank and taking our piece of paper and say, I would like an ounce of gold, I'd like an ounce of silver or whatever from this piece of paper. We began to assume that the piece of paper was a payment rather than a promise to pay. We began to assume that it was a payment rather than an intermediate step before you got paid. And the only way you got paid is when you acquired some gold, some silver. That's payment. Gold and silver are money. Right? And so if you're going to make an investment decision to say, do I want more money? Do I want less money? I want more money. That necessarily means I want more gold. I'm Alfred Addis. We're out of time. I want to thank all of you for listening. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
But still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.